Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer, how laughter bellows louder among friends, and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover and experience the best of nature, with over 450,000 trails worldwide and navigation right at your fingertips. Find your outside with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your next outdoor adventure.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is the Executive Director of Minuteman Disaster Response, Mr. Eric Burke. Their mission is to bring hope in immediate aftermath of disasters with the aid of volunteer units at no cost to those who need it most. Eric, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
First of all, I know you're very, very busy, but I got to give you major props for not only the work you've been doing over the years, but what you guys were able to get done in helping out the people down there in Central Texas with all the flooding. Can you talk about that particular situation right off the bat and when you got the word and how you guys were able to help the people who were there who might have lost some family members and some friends?
Sure. So we are fortunate to have a couple of retired meteorologists among our volunteers who watch weather events really closely. So we got information on the 4th as it was unfolding there in Kirk County specifically, because that's the area where there was the greatest loss of life. Mm-hmm. We actually got someone down there that afternoon, evening to survey the situation, because unfortunately during disaster events, the early information is often spotty and incomplete. And so whenever possible, we like to get one of our own people there to assess how we can best assist that community, if our services are needed and what equipment and how to respond. So we were there very early and quickly found out that it was truly a horrific situation that was going to require help from not only us, but really a lot of other organizations from across the country because of the size and nature of that disaster.
Yeah, it seemed like it was just getting worse and worse and worse, and the flooding just got higher and higher and higher, and it was just an amazing thing. And so, like I said, you guys were down there. What were some of the things you were doing specifically?
Sure. So when we got down there, we made contact with a couple of the volunteer fire departments in the small community, specifically in Hunt, Texas. Mm-hmm. And that's the community nearest where all of the camps were, where the children were. Mm-hmm. So when we approached them, they said, "What are your resources?" And we had with us a small team. We had a track loader with a grapple. We had chainsaws, and we had 8 people, not knowing exactly what we were getting into. And we were given an assignment right away to assist some of the first responders and some of the dog teams to go out and search the riverbanks. So initially search and rescue, but quickly it turned into search and recovery. Mm-hmm. So because we are experienced at, you know, moving trees and debris, that's what we commonly do after hurricanes and tornadoes. Those skills were valuable immediately. So as the dog teams would work the banks and the riverside there, If they alerted to something, our team could use that compact track loader and chainsaws to break it down so that they could do a much more thorough inspection of that debris before clearing it and moving on.
It was a very, how do I put this? It was a changing situation. It was fluid. It was like it was every hour something different was going on. How are you able to handle, you know, this situation that, as you said, it was becoming worse and worse?
Right. So it was a very difficult situation and really something that we do not traditionally do. Like I said, the tree and debris removal is very common for us, mm-hmm. but in a very fluid situation with, the potential loss of life, mm-hmm. which we knew had occurred, but not to what extent. And just changing direction from the local authorities as they got new and additional information,
right.
Those priorities would shift fairly frequently. But just remaining flexible and being committed to be part of the solution and following their guidance was really important in this scenario.
I know one thing, you guys were needed. In fact, can you talk about the other groups of people who were involved that wound up helping out? Because again, it was just a major undertaking and all hands on deck.
Absolutely. Yeah. There were a lot of other, established volunteer organizations that do this type of disaster response work there. And then there were the professional teams from really all over the United States. I at one point I heard there were teams, specifically the USAR, the search and rescue teams from 25 different states. They're supporting the operation, because it was over many miles of the river, 30 some miles, I think it was mm-hmm. one of the figures that I heard. So, it just took a lot of time to get down into the debris, get down into the riverbanks and, work through there. So it took, not only our resources, we contributed in that one small area, but took hundreds and thousands of people,
yeah.
Supporting it, to make sure that, they could do the best that they could to recover, any survivors and then ultimately any remains to give those families closure, in that situation.
Were there several harrowing moments for your crew, or was there just one or two? Or I know you were there longer than you probably thought you would be there. And that was showing how overwhelming that situation was.
Right. So we were there, the first week it was still very rapidly changing environment. And then after the initial flood that caused all of the damage, they did have additional rainfall. So mm-hmm. about a week into it, they had additional rainfall that caused an additional wall of water coming down that river. So they evacuated all of the operations, had everyone move their equipment and personnel back up because the water went over bridges again, certainly not as severe as the first time, but enough to cause great concern for those who were working in the area. So that was probably, the most dramatic in terms of a rapidly changing situation that could also be life-threatening simultaneously.
Exactly. Again, it's very tricky for everyone that's helping. How was it? I mean, you've done these number of times now. How was it organized? Because I know it's kind of like on the fly as well, but the people who were responding, the different organizations from all over the country, they kind of work together, but somebody's got to, keep it organized. How was that done?
Sure. So we worked with some representatives from the Hunt Fire Department. It's a small volunteer fire department, but they were doing everything that they could to coordinate the resources as they came in and put those people and resources in the right spot where they had reports of the needs for the search and recovery efforts. And throughout the week, those priorities changed, but they did a great job of trying to inventory folks that came in and what their capabilities were, and then putting them in the right spot to be the most effective. So in any type of a situation, especially of that scale, there's a little bit of chaos, and that's mm-hmm. just part of it. We were proud to be selected as one of the early folks there who could get in and help with that debris removal. And they did a great job, you know, under the circumstances. You know, we've responded many times to disasters where there are fatalities, but nothing like this. This was, you know, a mass casualty incident. The last I knew, it's over 100 fatalities there in Kerr County, and they're down to the last few missing people that they're trying to recover. So truly, you know, one of those events that, you know, happens to even first responders maybe once in a lifetime.
Yeah, it's very, very, very overwhelming, and it touched a lot of lives, and for people who were reading about it or watching it or seeing about it on social media, it was just an amazing thing that you guys were able to handle as much as you could. My question for you as well is, how long were you down there, and then where did you guys stay? And I know the hours were back to back to back.
Right, right. So we, like I said, we had two people there that evening to assess the situation. And as of tomorrow, we will be there, have been there 20 days. So we've rotated teams out each week because it is not only physically exhausting, just the conditions and the heat, but also very, very mentally taxing as well. Just the gravity of the situation and knowing that what you're out there doing and supporting is you're looking for human remains, which is certainly important work, but also very, you know, just an emotionally heavy situation.
We're talking with Eric Burks. He's the executive director of Minuteman Disaster Response. You've been doing this how many years now?
I've been doing this for 6 years, and I think this is the 59th or 60th disaster that I've responded to. And
was this the largest?
This is certainly the most fatalities and probably the most dramatic in terms of impact to the community. And really, the it's hard to capture. I mean, you've seen the pictures and the videos on television and social media, but it's hard to explain the violence of the water that came down that river and stripped trees of their bark and mutilated cars. You could tell it was a car, but often you couldn't even tell what model or brand it was because it was so destroyed from having been rolled down that river for miles in some cases.
Just absolutely amazing. And again, you've been doing this for 6 years. When you started Minuteman Disaster Response, I'm always impressed and have full respect for first responders because they go in like firefighters. They go in when people would run out or, you know, medical emergency or even, you know, police officers. They will take those opportunities because they want to help. When you came up with Minuteman Disaster Response, what inspired you? What made you want to let's do this? Let's provide this volunteer effort.
Sure. So the organization actually started in 2011, prior to me being involved.
Okay.
Started in 2011 after the Joplin tornado, which at the time was one of the deadliest tornadoes, you know, in U.S. history.
Yeah.
There were, you know, four guys from the North Texas area that said, you know, we should do something. And so they loaded up a trailer full of supplies and took it up there. And like a lot of well-intentioned people want to be part of the solution and found out that that was not the answer. They didn't need any more supplies. They had everything that they needed from the outpouring of, you know, generous people across the nation. What they needed was people who were trained, equipped, and ready to serve the community. So they came back and started putting together, you know, how do we train for this? How do we gather resources? How do we gather knowledge and the proper tools to be able to show up and be an asset immediately? So that's what they began. And over the last 14 years, we've continued to grow and evolve and learn and try to gather every tool and every bit of information that we possibly can to best serve communities after they've been impacted by disasters.
Can you talk about some of the different types of disasters that you guys have responded to?
Sure. So typically floods, hurricanes, and tornadoes. We've done some fire on support. But really, tornadoes, you know, Texas, Oklahoma
Yes,
have been
it is.
traditional.
Tornado Alley.
Tornado Alley, exactly. So we've responded to many of those. And those are, you know, for us, usually it's about a 7 to 10 day deployment to clean up a community if it's an EF2, EF3 type tornado. Mm-hmm. Hurricanes, those are much broader. We've done a number of those in South Louisiana and then also in Florida. And then simultaneously, you know, the Central Texas flooding, you know, Kerrville got the bulk of the attention, but San Angelo had as many as 1,200 homes flooded there.
Is that right?
So it was just water inundation. It wasn't the violent moving water,
mm-hmm.
but that same system the evening before dumped a huge amount of rain in San Angelo, an area that's not typically prone to flooding, but flooded 1,200 homes. So we had simultaneously two teams working in the San Angelo area, just helping people take out wet carpet, contents, furniture, depending upon the height of the water in their homes, mm-hmm. Cutting away drywall, removing insulation, and then spraying with a mold inhibitor to keep the mold from taking over. So this event was a broad event. It wasn't just Kerrville, where, you know, there was the substantial loss of life, but it also...
Honestly, I wasn't sure we could pull this off ourselves.
You had the vision, and Blinds.com brought your dreams to life.
Yeah, their custom window treatments and free design consultation. Total game changer. Ava walked us through everything. Styles, colors, what would work best in this space.
And we didn't have to leave the house. Free samples showed up fast, and they made it super easy to compare and choose.
Right? Plus, no high-pressure sales pitch, just smart guidance. And the install? I thought it'd be tricky. But Blinds.com instructions were clear. Everything fits perfectly.
And thanks to their SureFit guarantee, if something doesn't fit, they remake it for free. Talk about peace of mind.
And it costs way less than having a designer to our house or going to one of those overpriced showrooms.
We saved money, got the exact look we wanted, and we did it ourselves.
We did it.
So, kitchen windows next?
Blinds.com makes buying and installing window treatments easy and affordable because nobody covers windows better than Blinds.com. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
Out here, it's not only the amazing views, but the way time stretches out a little longer and how the breeze hits just right at the summit. With All Trails, you can discover nature's best with over 450,000 trails around the world. Download the free app today.
So impacted other communities, and San Angelo was probably, by the numbers, the other community most broadly impacted.
So, you know, when people think about, you know, disasters and disaster response, and again, you got to try to help people recover. Part of the recovery is, like you said, things that people don't even think about. Like you were talking about, molding might happen. And, you know, people could die from that if it's not, you know, if you're not proactive. Can you talk about some of the other things that you guys do or that happens in disasters that people are maybe take for granted or just don't know about?
Sure. One of the common things is power outages often accompany these disasters. So sometimes the basic things like keeping food refrigerated, you know, is overlooked. Freezers full of food go bad, you know, costing mm-hmm. Homeowners, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars and having lost their food supply. For those, especially with medical conditions, that loss of power can be life-threatening, whether they need oxygen machines or sensitive to temperature or really just a huge number of challenges that come with a prolonged power outage. Even if it's not directly at their home, it could be a mile or more away where a power line has been substantially damaged and it towers or poles mm-hmm. have to be replaced or rebuilt, impacting those homeowners for days. And when it's, you know, in Texas weather approaching 100 degrees, it doesn't take very long before that can become a very serious health risk to some residents.
Exactly. And you were talking about electricity as well. I was thinking about, you know, in this day and age of technology, people cannot function properly or comfortably without some sort of phone service or Wi-Fi or those kind of things as well. So it makes it harder to get things done or repaired or or to communicate? Can you talk about some of those things that you have to deal with?
Absolutely. Yeah. Sometimes needs from a community or a neighborhood or are not even known, because if they have lost that power and then they lost their ability to recharge phones, that communication aspect becomes critical as well. So that adds to the challenge of not only knowing what the needs are, but where the needs are if residents who have lost that ability to communicate. So, you know, having a plan, being prepared, having a generator, if it's at all possible. A lot of times people can keep the basic functions running, keep their refrigerator going, and be able to charge their phones and other devices so that they stay informed and can reach out and let not only family members know, but then let the community know what the needs are.
So between the disasters, I'm sure you guys have some sort of training, or there might be people who also want to volunteer and you want to catch them up on how you guys are organized. Can you talk about what that's like?
Sure. That's always an ongoing thing between disasters. Like I said, we operate compact track loaders with grapple, and that's, you know, an expensive machine that's complicated to operate. So we're always doing training to keep our operators as proficient as possible. Chainsaws, another important tool that we use a lot, but also can be a very dangerous tool if not properly trained. Excuse me. So that ongoing training is a big part of staying ready and being prepared for that next disaster.
Can you talk about the mentality of your volunteers? Because again, not everybody can be a fireman. Not everybody can land the plane. Not everybody can do the things that you guys do. So I'm sure there are people who think they might want to be able to help, but you guys have to be able to determine if they can be in that kind of a situation, responding to a disaster, you know, where things change or are fluid.
Absolutely. Some people are very disturbed by the environment that a disaster creates,
right,
and it's not for them. And that's fine too. So we've got really a job for anybody who has a heart to serve. We've got a team of maintenance guys that they change the oil in all the generators, and they make sure the tire pressures are good on the trailers, and they restock our trucks. So there's many ways to serve that's not directly in the field for those people who either don't have the desire to be in that environment or are limited by their ability to travel for an extended period. So in North Texas, there's a number of ways to serve just by supporting our operation. And then for those who do enjoy going out there and being on the front line, that does take a different type of personality, but really it's the person who has the heart to serve and who's willing to remain flexible and positive with, you know, often rapidly changing conditions.
This is just so amazing. And again, it's so impressive. And that's why I'm glad we have you on. We're talking with Eric Burks. He's the executive director of Minuteman Disaster Response. And I guess when the organization started, they found a need. How hard was it to get off the ground? I know you say you've been doing it for 6 years, but it's been around since 2011. But I'm sure there's some stories about, okay, you just don't just jump up and do it. I'm sure you had to, especially since, you know, you're providing the service with no cost to those who are victims of the disasters.
Sure. So just the learning process, learning how to approach a community and offer those services. You know, when people show up and say, we're here to help and it's free, it's not going to cost you anything, that raises some level of suspicion.
Sure.
It's like, really, really free? Mm-hmm. What's the catch?
Right.
Sometimes we've got to talk people into that. You know, we've got, having been established now for a number of years, we've got a website that tells about who we are and what we do. We've got some recognition in some areas as one of those trusted sources who can provide the services to the communities at no cost. But, you know, initially there were some challenges with that, saying, you know, we want to help, but it's free. It's like, how does that work? And we've got a great base of donors who support our mission. both individuals, foundations, and corporations that see value in what we do in providing assistance in the immediate aftermath of a disaster. And that's what fuels us and allows us to buy equipment and chainsaws and diesel fuel and everything else that goes with it. So that's been an evolution, and it's certainly taken some time. It's not something that you gain trust immediately, but you've got to continue to show that you're going to use dollars wisely that are donated, and then mm-hmm. continue to provide services to the communities that need it most after a disaster.
So I know what you're doing is unique. How unique is it, though? I know you're not the only, you know, disaster response that's totally at no cost for those who need it most. Or is it? Are you the only one?
No, there are many other organizations ranging in size from, you know, small to large, nationwide to very regional. Mm-hmm. And when we started off, you know, we started off in North Texas, and we would just do basically local stuff. We'd go into Oklahoma or maybe Louisiana or Arkansas. But now we've got members in 41 different states across the country.
Very nice.
We've gone as far as Vermont to respond to flooding, Florida to hurricanes, California after the fires this mm-hmm. Earlier this year. Mm-hmm. So as we've continued to grow, not only in our number of volunteers, in our resources and our ability to travel to farther places. So it just takes, you know, focus and remaining committed to our mission and to serving people. But there are certainly other organizations. You know, one of the larger ones is probably like Samaritan's Purse, who have operations all over the United States, really all over the world. So there are certainly others that do it. We're not unique in that space, but mm-hmm. we continue to do our part and continue to grow and serve those that we whenever we can.
When you respond to the disasters, I meant to ask you this a little bit earlier. When do you know now is the time to go in? Is there such a time to say, well, it's too dangerous right now, or we don't know if this is going to be a disaster or not? I mean, I was trying to figure out the timing.
Sure. No, that's a great question. And often, honestly, that's one of our toughest struggles is early in a disaster is getting that reliable information for us to work through that decision process on. Part of how we do that is through the Texas Division of Emergency Management. Mm-hmm. They have a voluntary agency liaison who provides information to organizations like ours on what needs are and how things are developing from their perspective. They're the professionals that are charged with dealing with this, but they rely on the volunteer organizations to do the work in the field. So often those decision points come pretty rapidly, mm-hmm. and depending upon the nature and complexity of the situation, our goal is to be there as early as possible to provide that assistance, but not so early that we're in the way for any life safety type aspects that the first responders are doing.
Exactly. When you first got involved, what was your why? Well, you're just like, I want to do this. I want to help people. Just tell your story a little bit.
Sure. So I started as a volunteer myself. And I just thought it was interesting that a group would provide this type of service for free. That was puzzling, having come yeah. from a corporate world and mm-hmm. Everything that you do is, you know, is for profit. You look for a way to make it pay. And this was a really interesting model that you do it for free and people donate to your cause because they believe in it. So that was very intriguing for me. And then once I got involved in it, found it to be extremely rewarding.
It is. And again, you not only save lives, you affect lives. And it's just an amazing process and something to be a part of. You see yourself doing this a long, long time or in like different roles in the Minuteman Disaster Response Organization?
I do. I, you know, like I said, I started as a volunteer, mm-hmm. You know, just helping with a few things here and there. And then got more and more involved over time, then took on the role of director of operations, and then this past year was promoted to the executive director. So I hope to continue to grow the organization and increase our ability to serve communities impacted by disaster across the nation.
Like I said, I admire every single thing that you're talking about and everything that you're doing, again, because not everybody is wired that way. I always feel like that I could try to do that myself at some degree. In fact, you know, I've always felt that way. And so I'm really, 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 really glad to talk to you about this and get some more insight into what it's like to go in and help people on that particular level. And like I said, you just got through doing the central flooding in Texas. Is there another disaster that we don't know about that you got some of the crew on right now?
Right now, everything that all of our resources are dedicated to the Central Texas flooding. So we're at a point kind of in the season that would generally be between tornado season from the spring. We're not quite into hurricane season. We are technically, but there's been really not much activity just yet. It is early. So usually the summertime is a relatively quiet time for us when we do some training, but we had to cancel some training this past few weeks here just because of this unexpected flood. And but we were glad to be able to be a resource to those communities that were impacted.
I'm glad you brought up seasonal. I'm glad you're talking about, like, you know, the times of the year. Were you guys at all helpful or needed when they had the big ice storm, when the power went out a couple of years ago here in Texas?
The grid absolutely failed. Right. So that was a huge event, and it was something that was unique because it really impacted, you know, the state north to south, east to west. And, and Texas is a huge state. So it was so different from other disasters. You know, tornadoes, they're usually very localized. Even hurricanes are somewhat localized. You can go, you know, an hour or two away and get whatever supplies that you need and power and fuel and everything else. But with that ice storm, it was really different. We used our equipment to support a local fire department whose station had gone down because they lost not only power, but water, it froze up. So we used some of our trailers that we are self-sufficient with in the field. One is a big incident command post. It's a 53-foot semi-trailer. Has its own generator on board. So we took it to this fire department and they operated their 911 calls and dispatch out of it for a couple of weeks until they could get all of their systems back online at their fire station. So we're always looking to be a part of the solution, even if it's a non-traditional role. And that was one of those unique situations where we were able to help.
Well, Eric, I want to say again, we can't thank you enough for being there in those situations where, you know, a disaster occurs. He is Eric Burks, the executive director of Minuteman Disaster Response. Eric, I would love to have you back on again the show sometime again, but not necessarily real soon.
Okay, that sounds good. Hopefully we won't have another disaster anytime in the near future.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And joining us right now is one of my favorites, Miss Darla Shirley. She's the executive director of Youth World, a great organization inspiring hope and relieving economic burdens for children in need in Southern Dallas. Miss Shirley, how you doing?
Hello, Chris. I'm doing marvelous.
Darla, I'm always so happy when I talk to you because you get so much stuff done, and I can't even believe you got a little bit of time to stop down and tell everybody how things are going in Youth World.
Well, Chris, it's an honor. Thank you for having me. I always enjoy sharing what's going on here in the Southern sector and all that's going on in the community down here.
Well, it's summertime. What is summertime like at Youth World? And by the way, your campus is absolutely beautiful. Thank you for inviting me to come out there back in June.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Man, you were amazing and right on target. You came out and talked to our teens at the Summer Teen Leadership Camp, and it was amazing. Them watching, I don't know if we could hear anything, but unless it was wows and oh my gosh, and you didn't, you know, kind of, you saw who, you was with who, the stories that you shared, your life journey along is how did you get from from a dream to reality, all those things just so inspired our teenagers. I can't thank you enough for coming, taking your time out and sharing your stories, your journeys, and leadership tidbits that, of course, all your big, long journey, all the things that you've learned along the way just helps them become the leaders they are. I can't thank you enough for sharing that with our teen leaderships.
Well, you know, that's going to happen all the time. I enjoy that. And I thought it's always about, you never know what kind of impact you can have on lives, especially with kids, when, you know, all they need to know is they got a chance. You know what I mean? And that's why I like the fact that you even have Youth World. Tell everybody again, you know, what's been going on this summer at Youth World, and then we'll talk about how you even came about getting Youth World started.
Yeah. We just wrapped up our 28th summer camp,
wow.
If you can believe it. 28 years of free summer camp for the kids. And Chris, it started out by, you know, that when you find yourself saying somebody needs to do something, you're usually somebody. And it started out from knowing that kids are hungry. 1 in 4 kids are going without food. So we said, well, let's feed the kids in the summer when there's no school lunches. And it just evolved from there. I had no idea that, you know, 28 years we'd still be impacting and feeding kids. But here we are. We just wrapped up that camp. And I'll tell you, that's why it may seem quiet today, because if you called me last week, you'd be hearing about 500 kids in the background.
That's what I really expected. I promise you, I was expecting that you'd have to close the door and you'd have the kids getting their different classroom things on. And I mean, can you talk about what the campus is like? Because I try to paint pictures when I talk to explain how wonderful it is over there. But it is just an amazing opportunity for kids after school and when they have nowhere to go, but they can learn and they can do different things. They can play outside. It's a very large campus, and you've got so many different volunteers and educators there as well. Can you talk about some of the different areas? I even saw some robotics there the other day.
That's right. We want to give them exposure. So let their minds, we know every kid has a God-given place in this world. So let's help them find it. Let's give them opportunities and exposures. And so we have all different areas and ways when they come into, for example, when they come into summer camp, the day is filled every 30 minutes, if not more, is rotating, whether that's to the library to help hone their reading, or the art room for creativity, the game room, the VR lab, which I want to talk about after a while, the VR lab, to Bible adventures and the outdoors, so many clinics, all the things. Yeah, you saw robotics and more. We STEM projects. Yeah. We just wanted to give them exposure, whether that was, hey, let's be a part of the choir, or what is your thing? We had kids, elementary kids, that were making a band of, if you can believe it, a xylophone and their guitars and their drums and their keyboards. And yeah. It was just amazing watching them create and come alive. We had a class of media for the teens that learned how to create their own videos and edits and all the things. It was just, we tried to give them so much experience in what seemed a fast, you know, 6 weeks, but a fast time, but give them as much exposure and experience while they were here. And usually once a kid comes in at the 1st of June, they're usually here all summer. This is their safe zone. This is their summer. And so we want to give them opportunities to experience so much. Even in the sports clinics alone, of course, the Dallas Mavericks came out and did a basketball clinic. The Dallas Stars came out and did a hockey clinic. John Franklin Myers of the Denver Broncos came out and did a football clinic. Bridge lacrosse, pickleball. We just tried to get it all in and say, hey, experience this, experience the coaches, experience the wisdom, experience being a part of the team in case they don't have opportunities otherwise. And yeah, it's been amazing. And then what you were a part of when you came out was the teen leadership camp.
Yes.
For teenagers that was 12 to 16. And Chris, along with you, we had what I call heavy hitters like yourself, heavy hitters that would come in, businessmen in the community, mm-hmm. and women that like Lisa New from the, you know, executive of the Dallas Zoo come in and talk to them. Just so many people that would come in, Mayor of Cedar Hill, and so many that would speak leadership, but also let them know you can too.
Exactly.
You can get
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Let's make a plan. Let's make a pathway. Let's make right choices because you can too. And that's what I love. Motivating them, speaking into them. It was just amazing what all of you came together and enlightened and given our teens bigger thoughts than, you know, just, oh, I just want to get a job. Well, that's great, but to do what and to go where and all those things, you know, that you don't necessarily think about when you're 15 or 16, but you should be.
I know one thing, you mentioned the VR lab. The virtual reality part, they were really getting a kick out of that area too.
Oh my goodness. Now, yes, that's our pilot program. As you know, we just started that. We have 30 VR headsets that they come in. And for the kids, it's all about brain health. For the elementary kids, it's about brain health.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, I have to say, remember last summer when you came out and you helped us give away 1,000 scooters and helmets
right.
at Redbird?
Exactly. Uh-huh.
That was a part of TBI, Traumatic Brain Injury Awareness program that we did mm-hmm. last year.
Mm-hmm.
So this year with the VR, we said, hey, let's take it a step farther. We're aware, but what do we do about it? And so the VR lab is actually a part of brain health and recovery.
Oh, okay.
So that's what the children oh. we're helping cognitive with memory, with motor skills, reflexes, all those different things that helps grow their brain and causes health. The teenagers, when they went in, it was about career choices, career exploration.
Yes.
So we loaded it with different careers that they could go and actually experience. You know, you mm-hmm. think you might want to be a vet? Well, here, give this cat a shot.
Right.
You think you might want to be
in, put on the goggles.
Yes. So it was amazing. We have other things in there too. Travel, you know, 150 travel destinations, all those things.
It's amazing for kids. Yeah.
When what we want is the teenagers to say, what do I need to do to be that? And
right.
let's make them, you know, help them make a plan.
Right.
Or what do I need to do to go there? Let's, you know, it's stats show that a majority of kids don't leave a 5-mile radius. Well, let's get them hungry for it. Let's mm-hmm. say, here's your possibilities. Here's what you can see and where you can go. And then help them make a plan to get there. So that VR lab, yeah, they're having a great time. They're having fun. But, you know, we've got a rhyme or reason for it. And I'm so excited about it. And like I said, it's just a pilot program that we just started. So there's so much more to it. But I'm real excited about what it accomplished this summer and that we were able to expose so many kids to that world, you know, to the mm-hmm. VR world.
How many kids did you have this summer for the camp and all the summits and things?
We'd have about 500. Three to 500 every day.
Like I was saying, I'm always impressed because you have so many kids there and there's room. It's not like, oh, they're all crowded up into this one little space. No, it's a really, really nice place that kids can actually learn. They can have fun. They can think. They can exercise. They can spread out. They're not. And they really enjoy being there. So I'm always just amazed at that. Is that a high number or is that a low number? Because you know, year round, you have all kinds of kids over there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good number, Chris. Mm-hmm.
A manageable number. There you go. Manageable. I can read between the lines.
Yeah.
Manageable.
We rotate them. They're in teams and groups and genders, and they get rotated. You know, I have a saying, I didn't invent it. I don't know. I can't remember where I caught it years and years ago, mm-hmm. but it certainly is true that if you don't put a show on for them, they will for you.
Yeah.
So, we make sure there's no such thing as free time, that mm-hmm. we have it accounted for. And we, you know, we have a reason for where they're going, what they're doing. And yeah, it makes for a great, happy, safe camp. They're loving it. And we're glad to do it. And that's just gives them, it's free to the kids.
Yeah,
you and I know it doesn't. It comes at a cost.
Exactly.
But we don't charge the kids because we want everybody to be able to participate, and we don't want to have to turn them away.
Right.
It's been, and we also want to solve economic burdens, not only by just offering the camp and the free meals, but also this summer while they were here. They got free eye exams.
Oh, nice.
And I think 40 kids they determined needed new glasses, mm-hmm. and we're passing out glasses for their prescriptions totally free at cost, thanks to Dr. Colston at Eyes on Broad. Came in, gave whoever signed up, gave them exams, and is giving them new glasses. Is that amazing?
It is absolutely amazing. But again, you've got a really nice formula, because what you're doing is things that are needed. And it took a while to get there. I mean, you started out, you were over in West Dallas at first, right? Over that way?
Yeah.
And then you got to, are you able to get the campus? But you, like you said, you got a lot of people to invest in you. And then all the different families were able to bring their kids over.
Yes. Yeah. We started out in an old nasty warehouse at Edgefield and Davis.
Yep.
In 75208, near Bishop Arts, before uh-huh. Bishop Arts was cool.
Exactly.
No one was going over there for dinner back then.
Right.
In fact, I had a young lady that came and spoke to the teens. She's probably, I won't tell her age, but let's just say 35-ish. But got kids now.
Mm-hmm.
And she came and talked to the teens, gave her testimony about growing up at Youth World in the old warehouse and how it impacted her and changed her life. But yeah, we were reminiscing about.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today.
Hey, very little AC, packing in, you know, finally 200 kids, when we go, wait a minute, we've got to do something. And that's when we started, looking at property and built this campus over here. We've come a long way, and praise God for it. I thank God every day that we're not still trying to fit hundreds of kids in that, one room warehouse. But you have to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, you got to start somewhere. And again, where you are now is just, like I said, it's very impressive and amazing, but it's very functional. I mean, you got a big kitchen. The kids can get fed. The educators can teach the kids. They got space to grow. Can you talk about how it serves a really nice purpose in the communities? Because, again, a lot of these families, they're single-parent families. They're blended families. And the kids actually need to be somewhere. And it's not like the good old days back when, you know, the old days of the 1950s and the 60s, whatever. And, you know, dad worked 9 to 5. Mom was at the house cooking. Those days are long gone. And
yeah,
so the kids, there's too many kids raising themselves. And so I think you are supplying a need and a purpose for a whole big area right there in Southern Dallas.
You're right, Chris. You know, when I built this first building over here in 75232 at the corner of Wheatland and Polk, I thought I built an elephant. Compared to where we were coming from, mm-hmm. It was an elephant. But it didn't take us long to start waitlisting kids. And then eventually in the summers, we had to turn teenagers away. We only had room for up to 12, you know, 5 through 12-year-olds, which mm-hmm. was, you know, who's crazier than a sixth grader? I just hated that we were doing that. And a few summers ago, I walked into the auditorium and I looked at a girl and I said, "Hey, haven't you been 12 for about 2 or 3 years now?" And she said, "Miss Darla, I have no place else to go."
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And that's, Chris, when we said, "Hey, we've got to expand. We've got to build another building right here." And we built that teen leadership facility. This is actually our third summer to be able to have the teens in to be a part of the summer camp again, which is huge. But it come with a price, with a cost, mm-hmm. you know, it's $2.5 million to add that facility. Ooh. Right behind us. And then with the commercial kitchen and the warehouse space, cause we have to do a lot of food distribution in our community, you know, to help these mamas. So we built that, and no one, you know, you never want to be, you know, it's, I guess what I want to say, everybody would say, "Hey, it's not the right time." You know, post-COVID, the building prices have gone so sky high, you know, 2019, that building would have cost us, you know, $1.5 million, you know. Post now, you know, in 2023, mm-hmm. when we built it, it was, you know, $2.5 million. But Chris, how do you tell a teenager or a kid, "Hey, just wait. We're not ready for you. We can't help you right now. But if you could just wait till the timing's right," you can't do that.
No.
You can't say, "Hey, don't make any stupid decisions till we get around to impact." No, right now. It's right now. They're living right now. They need help right now. They need groceries right now. They need hot food right now. They need to be motivated to stay in school right mm-hmm. now and to make decisions right now. And so it was a right now time. And yeah, I know it's going to work out. You know, we're going to get that paid. And but I have no regrets because I see all the teens that's being, you know, mentored through there. I see all the hot meals that's coming out of
right.
that kitchen. All the distribution, grocery distribution we're able to do that we was not able to do before.
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't happening.
All I can say is the results are, I mean, it's still a journey, but it proves that what you were talking about was correct. In other words, what you were trying to accomplish back in West Dallas, the need was there, and the people you were able to talk to and convince and get them to, you know, put in some time, talent, and treasure, they're seeing the rewards. Because this has been going on how many years now?
28 years.
See? It's an amazing
yeah.
thing.
More to be done.
Yes. Where do you find the energy? Darla, Miss Darla, I keep, I'm always amazed at your energy.
Chris, you're one to talk. You're Mr. Energy yourself. I'm sure people ask you that all the time.
Yeah, we're like-minded.
While other people are propped up it watching you on TV, you're out there making it happen.
Well, all I can say is you and I got a lot of things in common, but at the same time,
right.
I'm just serious. you are just nonstop. So what's the next thing? Like you said, the kids just finished up camp. So what's coming up next for Youth World?
So we want to make sure we send them off well to school, that we celebrate them, that they know how important it is to actually return to school, not mm-hmm. just talk about it, but to get there. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping to give them uniforms, school uniforms. It's so necessary and takes yes. such a big burden off the even used uniforms.
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody
yes.
that's got school uniforms, you know, send them our way, because we're going to try to bless as many as we can. On August 5th, we're going to have a back to school dinner.
Mm-hmm.
Invite kids and their families out, give them a hot meal, encourage them about their school season, send groceries home, and hopefully we can do uniforms and clear. DSD uses clear backpacks, so clear backpacks. That's
right.
happening August 5th, and then in September, all the moms of the kids we served all summer, on September 13th, we say, moms, it's your time.
Oh,
you
nice.
Come in and let us bless you and speak into you. And so it's called Mom's Morning. We do a fashion show and a blessing store where moms can come and shop for free, groceries, household items, whatever we
that
might have,
so
makeups
nice.
We share with them. We encourage them. And this one, not only are we having a fashion show, which is so fun, but we also have, I was fixing to say, I don't know if you're old enough, but, you know, there's a Christian comedian called Sister Cantaloupe, and she's going to be with us for that Mom's Morning. She's hilarious.
Very nice.
And everybody needs a good belly laugh,
yes.
especially after you've had the kids all summer, you
oh,
know,
yeah.
out of school.
mm-hmm. It's a break. It's a nice little
yeah.
break.
So we're going to love on the moms on September 13th. And then we'll be starting our after, you know, we're year round. So we'll be starting our after school clubs where we mentor, help mm-hmm. them with their homework, reading, all the things, and feed them a good hot meal before we send them home. It's we've got an amazing after school program. So I'm looking forward to getting that kicked off again, and teen nights, what all is going to happen with that.
I was going to ask you something else here, because I've been talking to a lot of different nonprofits over the summer, and you know, it's kind of like when the pandemic happened and everybody had to adjust and make a pivot. Well, you know, in these economic times, and with budgets being cut back, or people not knowing how much inflation is going to be, and partners saying, "Well, I gotta not send as much money, or we can't be able to do the same things we used to do." How is it affecting Youth World? Because I know you have to be planning ahead sometimes, because, you know, you're at the mercy of, you know, people who want to donate their time, talent, and treasure.
Yes. And I know you, so I know you're going to let me be real.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. When you said that word treasure earlier, I wrote it down because I need some of it.
Mm-hmm.
We need help. Yes.
Yeah.
This camp, it costs almost $200,000 for just those 2 months for kids to come to Camp Free.
Mm-hmm.
So we do need help, and I'm still looking at going, okay, we've still got to pay for what we just did. Not only the facility the teens were in, the food came out of, but just the camp itself. So yes, I'm still looking for summer treasure, to be honest with you, because it is more expensive than it's ever been, and it costs more. It's not going to stop us from doing it, but
right.
it certainly puts it puts more I would say pressure, but I guess that's not the right word, because like I said, we're going to do it either way.
Mm-hmm.
And just know, hey. People are good, and they're going to step up, and they're going to help, and it's going to work out.
It really will, because again, people like to give from their heart when they know where they're giving is such a worthy cause, and it has an impact. And it may not have a immediate impact, but it has a long term impact.
Right.
And what you're
right,
doing
you're
with
right.
the kids it has long-term impact. Can you talk about how some of the kids over the years have come back to even be volunteers or educators themselves, or just the fact that they've made something out of themselves? I know you've got lots of examples.
Oh, yeah, absolutely right. Even this summer, we had a counselor that lived when he was a little kid. Mm-hmm. He lived in the apartments next door to us. And there was a time or two when we might have to send him home early, just as, you know, to get the correction and mm-hmm. And now he's one of our best counselors. He comes back. He went to college. He went out of state to college. He just graduated in May. He came back. He was an amazing counselor this summer, and his degree is in, I think it's called forensic science. He's got to be a policeman for a certain amount of time before he's allowed in that. So he just got hired on as a DPD police officer. I can't be more proud of him because, if you'd have looked at him at the kid and just given up, mm-hmm. that would have been it. But thank God. Yeah, he came through Youth World and he's an amazing young man. Like I said, that I had a young lady that has two little children now. She came and talked about how Youth World impacted her life and changed the trajectory of who she is and what she is. You don't see it right then. You just mm-hmm. know you're working hard and you're sweating and mm-hmm. you're spending money you don't have. Mm-hmm. But then the payoff later, Chris, the payoff later is so rewarding. And yeah, time and time we've had, I had a young girl that came back and said, "You always gave us shoes to go back to school. Here's $50. Can I sponsor a kid for shoes like you did for me?"
Wow.
It's like, oh my gosh, she didn't have to remember that. She didn't even have mm-hmm. to be grateful for that, but she was, because it meant so much to her. Mm-hmm. And those pairs of shoes meant you believed in me and you helped me and somebody else loves me and cares. That's amazing. So yeah, story after story. I talked to one kid, said, "Hey, do you remember me?" And usually I want to say, you know, were you bad or good? But I can't say that, you know, kind of narrows down the choices. But he said, I went to Colorado in college. I said, "What did you major in?" And he said, "Drama." And I said, "Well, of course you did. I could see that." Mm-hmm. Every time, you know, in elementary, I tried to pick him up at Conn Elementary, he was somewhere else creating drama. Anyway, but praise God. Yeah. Praise God. This summer, I had a grandmother that on the last day, she looked me right in the eye, Chris, and she said, thank you for letting my granddaughter stay here all summer. She said, "We had such a hard time with him," told me some things about her mm-hmm. story, what she's going through and the trauma that she's going through. She said, "But thank you for not giving up on her or dismissing her, but letting her grow this summer." Is that amazing?
It's
so who knows
amazing.
What she's going to become?
Exactly. And that's what this is all about. And you got the website. Can you tell people where they can find out more information on the website?
Yes, it's youthworld.org, www.youthworld.org.
Well, Darla, it's been a pleasure. And like Dave was, the volunteers say, thank you for all that you're doing. And thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you, Chris. I'm so grateful. And I thank you for your partnership and your love for Youth World.
You know it. And thank you all for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations like Youth World having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow. A real person.
Yep. I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow. I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
Hmm.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 40% off site-wide, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.